Welcome to Broad Appeal, the podcast that looks back at female-driven films from the not-so-distant past. I'm Sean.
And I'm Brian.
How you doing, Bri?
Sean, I'm feeling good, but I'm also feeling bad and a little bit crazy. How about you?
I'm feeling naughty but nice and super, as always. Brian, I'm very excited to welcome our listeners to series...
Three
of Broad Appeal, The Good, The Bad, and The Crazy.
Oh my god, my cup of joy is overflowing.
I am chumessing at the thought.
We've done 2.5 series. Our male gaze series was only a few episodes. But this is our third major venture.
In the Broad Appeal canon.
Yes, the Broad Appeal expanded universe.
Yes.
I would say that you are probably Black Widow and I'm the Incredible Hulk.
Okay.
You'll go with
Let's
that?
Let's run with that for now.
So, for those who didn't listen to our teaser, do we just want to very quickly explain how this season, The Good, The Bad, and The Crazy, works?
Yeah, let me explain it to see if I can do it. We have taken actresses with long and illustrious careers that we're both interested in and love. We have looked at a film that is 100% good. We've looked at something that is definitely bad. And we've found a treasure trove of crazy. Crazy good, crazy bad, crazy. We don't know. Just crazy.
Because, let's face it, every actress who's been in Hollywood for an extended period of time has got some clunkers, and they've also got some things that just make absolutely no sense.
Do you want to do a bit of actress word association real quick?
Sure, go.
Okay, I'm going to name an actress, actress who is not on this series.
Sure.
And I'm going to make you just tell me something crazy.
Okay, go.
All right. Sandra Bullock.
Demolition Man.
Betty Davis.
That one where she plays evil twins. Dead Ringers. Also, the White Mama.
Oh,
the
yes.
The one where she's the foster mother to the children.
That's actually a searing social commentary.
Oh, also, Return to Witch Mountain. Isn't she in that?
Yes.
And The Whales of August. I mean, that is out there.
Fucking crazy, that man.
It's all about freaking whales. Anyway.
I will do two more. Okay, what about Angela Lansbury?
Mrs. Claus. I know it was made for TV, but it is a Jerry Herman musical in which he plays Santa Claus's wife in 1910's Lower East Side.
Halle Berry.
Well, of course, there's Catwoman.
Yeah, enough. Enough
let's,
said.
Let's just end it there. And actually, that's a lovely segue, isn't it? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I tell you, we don't plan these things.
No, we really don't.
Talk to me about Michelle Pfeiffer, Sean. I have a feeling that adolescent Sean and Michelle had quite a relationship.
I think Michelle Pfeiffer is the first actress I ever became aware of. It has to do with the Sega Genesis.
I was not expecting that phrase to follow the width.
It has to do with the Sega Genesis edition of Batman Returns, the video game.
Okay.
Now, do you remember the cover of the Batman Returns? Well, maybe the VHS.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it had their faces sort of floating, and it was... I mean, I think the thing that's weird about Batman Returns is that Catwoman and the Penguin are kind of given equal weight in the publicity, but if you ask me, the movie should just be called Catwoman. I mean, there are other good aspects of it, but I mean, her performance is one for the ages.
Yeah, something about Michelle Pfeiffer, and as we mentioned on previous Broad Appeals, that costume... I mean, it explains my neoprene obsession.
So your mother took a strong interest in the fact that you seem to love Michelle.
Well, I think it was signs of my heterosexuality.
It was like, you talk about,
on you.
Talk about answered prayers, all those offerings to the Virgin and St. Bridget.
I mean, it was just prepubescent body dysmorphia. I mean, didn't we all go through that?
So you loved Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman, and I mean, haven't we all? And basically, every time I meet someone with a whip, I just think... they're not doing as well as Michelle.
And how often is that, Brian?
Oh, you know. Oh, every once in a while. La-di-da-da. But so, other than Batman Returns, are there other Michelle Pfeiffer roles that sort of seared their way into your consciousness? I know we have done The Age of Innocence. People who are interested in that film should go back and look at that in the archive.
Well, there's the video for Gangster's Paradise. which features her in it, which I wasn't able to watch the video because it scared me too much. That song used to scare me when it came on the radio.
Why?
It's really, really dark, you know? And I remember seeing this clip where she goes into the classroom to teach the youths.
She teaches them ridicule about Bob Dylan.
But you know what, Brian? That's an emotional scene. To see a teacher.
Are you saying that, like, when your mother was like, let's watch Dangerous Minds, you're like, no! You're, like, running into the other room like, I can't deal with a lovely blonde woman teaching inner city children. I'd rather watch Freedom Riders with Hilary Swank.
Now, what is this voice?
it's like the Ned Flanders version of Sean. Yeah. Or Ted and Todd. What are their names?
Rod and Todd.
Rod and Todd.
Now, can I just say to you, in no dimension is my mother ever going to say, let's watch Dangerous Minds.
But she would love Freedom Riders, I'm sure. She's always been a Hilary Swank fan. No?
I'm not having any more slanderous things said about my mother, thank you very much.
Did you actually see Dangerous Minds?
I told you, I saw that scene where she wrote something about green beans on the board, and then she gets ridiculed. I don't know, I never saw a teacher be treated that way before.
As a small town boy, you were instilled with an Irish sense of we respect our elders, no matter how wrong they are.
Now, what about me? What about you and Michelle Pfeiffer?
It's an interesting question. To be honest, and this is so classic that, you know, you were playing Sega Genesis and I was watching an Edith Wharton adaptation, but I think probably I did first become aware of her through The Age of Innocence. I remember seeing her in Dangerous Liaisons, which is her first Oscar nomination. She's not the most memorable thing about that film. Glenn Close, I would suggest, is on the actress front, but she's definitely a major player in it. She's meant to be a very upstanding woman, but she has that sexual energy that's bubbling underneath.
Is she the virgin?
No, she's the married woman.
Oh, Uma Thurman.
The virgin is Uma Thurman, yeah, okay. Yeah. So she's the married woman that John Malkovich makes a bet that he can't, a bet with Glenn Close that he can't seduce her. I also remember watching her in The Russia House, which is I think it's a John le Carré adaptation. And I think this gets at something about Michelle Pfeiffer, which is that, like, she can be sorts of lots of different types. You know, she can be just as believable as a kind of cartoonish supervillain in a comic book movie. She can be Russian. She's, like, believably Russian. She's believably, you know, married to a Polish count and kind of vaguely European in The Age of Innocence. And she can also be a kind of trashy, you know, Italian-American type in something like Married to the Mob. And just like...
I think, Gangster's Moll in Scarface.
Yeah.
An evil hairspray-using mother.
Yeah, a kind of like... Yeah. She is such a beautiful woman. And beautiful in a way that no one else, I think, has ever been beautiful. Do you know what I mean? Like, her face looks like no one else's face. And it is quite feline, which is, I think, what is perfect for Catwoman. It's that interesting shape and those eyes and the way that her lip curls is just like that amazing shot in Batman Returns where they have the... You know what I'm talking about.
No, I'm just remembering One Fine Day. Oh, sorry to interrupt you, but I love that film.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
You know I love a rom-com. But it seems to fall into that, like, oh, she's an uptight career woman category, and, like, let's watch her, like, let down her hair.
But isn't that a screwball comedy? Because ultimately, the woman gets fixed at the end of it.
Inaccurate. Okay, just pause here. Like, the thing about a screwball comedy is that the women are the agents of chaos, and the men are the uptight pricks.
Think about
Bringing a Baby, right? So it's the much more modern take where the women need to, like, you know, get shtupped a bit by, you know, raffish George Clooney. All I remember is her, like, isn't she an architect? And she's carrying, like, an architect's model. And
she falls on it.
Yeah, of course. This is a cardinal rule. I think I got this from Roger Ebert. In any film where someone is walking with an architect's model, it will be destroyed by the end of the scene.
You know what I remember about that film? Because I saw it with my mother again. She makes, like, superhero costumes for her kids to get into this, like, kids' party or something to get rid of them for a while. And she makes them out of the contents of her bag.
It's amazing.
Like her handbag. My mother was just like, you know, that's what a woman's handbag can do.
She was an early contestant on Project Runway. She just knew how to make it work. But to go back to the thing I was just saying about her face, you know that shot I'm talking about in...
At the department store.
Yeah, the department store, and the image of the cat is on the window, and then she just appears. And there's something about the way that the shape of her face and that cartoon cat just kind of, like, merge. It's just incredible. So she's incredibly beautiful in this unique way, but she's able to play like a range of things. And I think we're going to get to that when we talk about today's film. By any account, like, a woman as beautiful and amazing looking as Michelle Pfeiffer should not even appear in life. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you were walking anywhere and you saw someone who looks like Michelle Pfeiffer, you would, like, remember that for the rest of your life. So there's no way that she should play, like, a mousy secretary or, like, a short order waitress in a diner in, like, Frankie and Johnny, the role originated by Kathy Bates her, on stage. No, seriously, they replaced Kathy Bates with Michelle Pfeiffer. And then, of course, you know, they made up and performed together in Cherie.
Do you think they ever acknowledged this?
I'm sure they just smoked a doobie and got over it. But, like, the thing about Michelle Pfeiffer that I've always been obsessed with is how private she seems as a celebrity. Like, obviously, she became a celebrity before the age of social media and stuff, but she just always feels like she has this slight reserve in public appearances. She doesn't want to talk too much about it. And she has, in what seems to be, to me, one of the most stable and happy marriages in Hollywood to Wunderkind. Well, he's not a Wunderkind anymore, but, like, you know,
Wunderman.
Exactly. Wunderherr.
Mr. Wonderful, that's what you call me, isn't it?
Writer, director, producer, David E. Kelly of, you know, L.A. Law.
Boston Public.
Ally McBeal fame. And Big Little Lies.
Yeah.
So I have this image of the two of them as just, like, having the perfect marriage. Like, as far as I know, they've not worked together.
Do they have children?
I think they do, yeah. Michelle Pfeiffer, it's just like, I think she kind of feels like she's probably the perfect person, because she's funny, she can sing, she's extraordinarily beautiful, she has a family, she seems to have a happy life, and yet, like, you can't hate her, you've just got to love her. And now we're getting more Michelle Pfeiffer in our lives.
This year it began with Wizard of Lies, Mother has just come out, Murder on the Orient Express is next, and she's just in our consciousness a bit more as well.
I kind of think this happened to Meryl as well, when their kids have grown up and they're sort of, they've now moved into mature roles, they sort of come back with a vengeance, and I'm really hoping we get that with Michelle. We haven't seen Mother yet. I have no idea if it's shit. But considering that the thing I liked kind of most about Black Swan was the resurgence of Barbara Hershey and Winona Ryder, I'm really hoping that Mother gives Michelle Pfeiffer something meaty to kind of chew into. She certainly looks, like, on fire in the trailer.
Mm.
That's a great overview of Michelle Pfeiffer. One thing we haven't talked about, it's just the thing that's lying beneath your chair.
Oh, yeah,
What
Lies Beneath.
Yeah, you're a fan of that movie, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I have only seen it once. Also with my mother, from Kieran's Video Shop.
This podcast is all about your mother. Carry on. It's a
scary.
Really good thriller. It's scary.
Well, it's Robert Zemeckis. So it's a really good film, and it is quite scary, but we should watch it together sometime.
So, yeah, I mean, just think about it. Like, thrillers, she's in that movie Wolf with Jack Nicholson.
The Witches of Eastwick.
Of course, how have we forgot?
Well, that's not a great film.
But what I'm just saying is, like, think of all the things this woman can do, from, like, serious spy dramas and period pieces and musicals and comedies and all this stuff. And I just, like, the more we talk about Michelle Pfeiffer, just, like, the more astounded I am that she even exists.
Didn't Sandra Bernhard say that she had herpes on her mouth the entire time during The Witches of Eastwick? Can we go back and check this?
Where's the fact checker? Get
Remember,
the intern.
She's like, they didn't even make it into a plot point or something.
Well, that, I mean, she has that curved upper lip. How is she going to act in a film with Kenneth Branagh? Curved upper lip versus no lips.
I know, mention Kenneth Branagh, I get very concerned about my own top lip as well. Now, I do have a top lip. It's not as thin as Kenneth Branagh's, but I do want to get it enhanced. But back to the podcast.
Back to Barbara Hershey, if we're on for the lip injection. So anyway, okay, the film that we chose to watch for the good Michelle Pfeiffer is her first nomination as a leading actress, 1989's The Fabulous Baker Boys.
God damn it! Shit. Stupid shoe. Is this where the auditions are?
This is where the auditions were. We're finished.
What about me?
You're an hour and a half late.
Yeah, well, I had a little trouble catching a cab.
Punctuality! First rule of show business.
This is show business?
We've watched the film. We've watched all three of the Michelle Pfeiffer films. I kind of foisted the Fabulous Baker Boys upon you. I feel like you maybe wanted to do What Lies Beneath or something else. So before we watched it, what were your preconceptions?
Well, I knew that it was a very loved picture from the 1980s, and that she sings 10 Cents a Dance in it, that she got an Oscar nomination, a red dress, these kind of things. Like,
you had the images.
You know, I had all those images in my head.
Did you know anything about, like, who her character is?
I got the impression that she was kind of this languid Shantusi who thumbs her way into a piano duo.
Real-life brothers, Jeff Bridges and Beau Bridges. Yeah, so it is kind of, I guess, a role that she's been associated with for a really long time, so much so that when they brought her out several years back on the Oscars to introduce Jeff Bridges, do you remember she told us touching stories about sitting in the makeup chair next to Jeff. Do you remember? It was like people's co-stars, and like, if you remember, like, Dear Julianne Moore was doing her best, but she was literally like, I met Colin Firth for 2 whole days, and he was so nice, and it was great to do that scene in a single man. I'm sure if I met him for a longer time, he'd be just as nice, but like, do you know what I mean? Or they had Colin Farrell.
Could they not have got Renee Zellweger to do it, honestly?
What did Colin Farrell say about Jeremy Renner?
He was like, I remember when I was spooning with you on the set of whatever it was, Tigerland or something. sure, you're great. You're a great fella, and you're a great spooner. Cheers, you fella. You're fucking bollocks, yeah.
So in the movie, you sure it was Tigerland? It might have been Tiger Orange. That's one for the
This is a super fans.
This
yeah.
Super fans is a very specialist reference. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, in the midst of all that, the Michelle Pfeiffer, Jeff Bridges one just exuded this sense of these two really amazing, nice people who are also both incredibly hot, Jeff Bridges and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes, in contrast to the not-so-hot Beau Bridges.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you could tell from the way she was talking about Jeff Bridges from the stage that they really enjoyed that experience.
Do you think they had sex during it?
I wouldn't even dare to speculate. I suspect they're both married people, and I don't really want to pry, Sean.
Okay. Yeah, and talk about interesting casting by putting actual brothers, playing actual brothers, one of whom is definitely the more suave, handsome one in
but
real
also,
life and on screen.
Yeah, but he's also, his character, Jack Baker, is the kind of moody piano genius. So they both play piano. They're in the film. I would have guessed it was L.A. from my memory, but actually it takes place in Seattle, which I think is brilliant because it's like they're these two-bit, you know, old-school piano act that really is probably dying out in these jazz bars that no one likes to go to. And they're not even in a, you know, a big American city. They're in Seattle. They do this act where they play the piano together, two pianos on stage, and they have all this, like, boring patter that they do, which is clearly written by Beau Bridges because he delivers most of it. To be honest, I didn't tell you this when we watched the film. I related so much to Beau Bridges. Like, basically, the way that you and I are in this podcast is very similar. It's like, Brian comes in with the plan, and Brian has all the patter, and here he goes, talking. And then you're, like, smoking a cigarette on the side and, like, giving, like, wry jokes and looking unamused.
But does that mean I'm Susie Diamond or Jack Baker?
I'm just saying, you're like, if we were the Baker Boys, you would definitely be Jeff, and I would be Beau.
Well, I'm sorry
about
that.
Spray on toupee.
Oh, Brian, don't say that. Can I just say, did you relate to him, or was that, like, a character you could play?
This was a character that I would play. This is what I always have the same feeling about Stanley Tucci in anything. Like, vaguely semi-handsome, particularly if they're vaguely Italian character actors who appear in, like, kind of uptight supporting roles. That is my métier. Anyway, those are the Baker Boys, yeah? Their act is not going very well, and so they have to bring in someone new, and that someone is a singer. In that kind of classic movie tradition, they do a scene where they, like, audition, you know, like, 37 people in a row who are all terrible. Memorably, Jennifer Tilly, you know, with her crazy high-pitched voice. Like, and this is where the movie, I started to see, like, okay, this is not a searing, naturalistic drama, because they just have all these people who are such bad singers. And then in walks Michelle Pfeiffer as Susie Diamond. What a name. Talk to us a bit about what you thought of her as she comes in and who her character is.
Well, she makes an entrance, for sure. She's late.
And then, of course, Beau Bridges / Brian is like, the first rule of show business is punctuality. We don't even want to see you. And meanwhile, Jeff is, like, scoping her out. This is the thing about Michelle Pfeiffer. Like, in walks a stunningly gorgeous woman. even though she's dressed in, like, 80s clothes with, like, you know, too many layers and big long dangly earrings, and isn't she wearing, like, a crazy hat or something?
Well, she's not wearing great clothes in the beginning.
That's what I mean, yeah. She takes gum out of her mouth, you know, to kind of, like, chewing gum. She's like a wisecracking dame.
Well, she's a jaded wisecracking dame. We find out that she is a call girl.
Did you find that believable?
Do you know what, Brian? I forgot that she was a call girl. So the answer is no. I did not find it believable.
She never says call. She works
escorts.
For, yeah, AAA escort services. They definitely later points in the movie where she, like, implies that she did actually sleep with her clients, you know? But we're meant to think that she's kind of used her sex appeal to get ahead. She's kind of down and out.
I don't think she uses her sex appeal to get ahead. I think she uses her sex appeal to get by. It's interesting. She's a character who has a very limited scope of her potential, and she's auditioning for a piano act of two loser brothers. You know, before we were going on air, we were talking about the quality of her singing.
Yeah.
The thing that really works in favor of this film is that she can definitely sing, and she's great, but she's not too good for the job she's doing.
Michelle's been in a bunch of musicals, one of which we may talk about more, hint later on, and she famously was considered to be Evita. I think somewhere floating on the internet is her audition tape, which we should listen to because I think it's famously terrible. So, Michelle...
Why?
Because it's a very hard role to sing, as all of the descamisados are aware. Yeah. Her singing scenes in this film are really probably what make this a star turn, and yet watching them again, I was like, okay, she has a somewhat thin voice. It's a strong voice. It's full of personality.
Would you call it breathy?
Possibly. Particularly in her first audition with them, she sings mostly with her eyes closed. Did you notice this?
No.
She delivers the songs very sensually. The character as written is probably really kind of emphasizing this sex appeal type thing. So you think she's kind of there to be a seductress, but she's not really a seductress, you know? Like, she's definitely sexy, but she's also just kind of like a fun, smart, intelligent working girl who gives the baker boys, like, lots of zingy one-liners. Like, when they do finally hire her, she sees her billing. Do you remember this? On the poster. And it's listed as the Fabulous Baker Boys with guest vocalist Susie Diamond, and she's like, guest vocalist, who's next week? Beverly Sills? And, like, that is just an example of the kinds of lines that she's, like, constantly delivering. It has this kind of, like, 1940s wisecracking vibe to me that she's, like, Veronica Lake or, like, Carol Lombard-type character. You know, Rosalind Russell.
Myrna Loy.
Myrna Loy was high class, darling. Okay. She's Nick and Nora Charles.
Margaret Rutherford.
You know, and then, like, later on as they start going on tour, they show up in this kind of fancy hotel for, like, a New Year's Eve gig and engagement, and she has this adjoining hotel room to theirs. There's, like, a fruit arrangement, and she's like, it's as if Carmen Miranda had an accident in my room. Like, she's just, I think, like, she's, you fall in love with Susie Diamond, not just because of how stunning she is and for her musical performances, but also for her kind of sharp wit.
Yeah, absolutely.
The movie, as you pointed out, is quite simple in a certain way, right? There's the two brothers and there's her.
Yeah, and obviously we know there are lots of people in the film because there's various scenes with audiences, but they're always kept in the dark. It really keeps the focus, the spotlight, as it were, on these three people and their relationship. As their success grows, so does Susie's input into what they do. At the same time, the chasm between the two brothers begins to widen. Jeff Bridges is getting just a little bit too big for his boots, too good for the naff telethons on Channel 75 at 1 a.m. for a gym that his brother is making him do. And also, there's definitely the underlining fact that Susie Diamond has made eyes and has had eyes made to her by Jack Baker.
Early on, he kind of asks her when they're done with the gig if she wants to go have coffee with him, and she's like, "You're not getting soft on me, Baker, are you?" Again, like, wisecracking dame. So she's
hard. Yeah, you know?
She knows, don't sleep with the guy who's essentially one of your bosses. And Bowbridges has also sniffed this out and is like, look, this is not a cocktail waitress that you can just sleep with and toss away. Because Jeff Bridges is kind of this, like, womanizer. We've seen him have one-night stands in the film. But that the key sort of turning point, yeah, right, happens in this New Year's Eve gig that they've booked into this fancy hotel, because Bowbridges is called away because his wife is ill or something, or the kid is ill.
Another interesting thing is that he has a wife and kids. We never, ever see them.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
So he's like kind of, yeah.
The way it should be.
Yeah. He's kind of, you know, the stable, boring family guy, and Jeff Bridges is the roustabout. Bo's away, and they have this New Year's Eve section of the film where it's just Susie and Jack performing on stage, but also it's just them in the two adjoining hotel rooms. And I mean, I think predictably, inevitably, first of all, that's where we get the iconic performance of her in the red dress on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
Did you know about this number?
Come on. It's a piano film with a beautiful woman. She's going to be in a red dress on a piano.
Do you remember which song it is?
No, what is it?
A lot of shoes.
Oh, it's Making Whoopee.
A lot of rice. Yeah. You're making whoopee. I mean, did you notice there was a choreographer listed for the Making Whoopee number?
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
Just for that number.
She's like on the piano. She's crawling around. She's like stroking Jeff Bridges' chin. She's almost like filleting the microphone. And again, like, why I think it works so well is that she is both sexy and ridiculous kind of at the same time. Wait, do you know what I mean?
Yes, of course.
Like, in my memory, I just remember thinking, oh, this is pure sex appeal. Oh, it's Making Whoopee, it's Michelle Pfeiffer in a red dress. But then watching it again, I was like, there's a kind of camp quotation marks to what she's doing that is fun with him. And it's not... Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, this is a reflection of her character in the sense that she's only serious enough.
Yeah.
She knows that she is the center of attention, spotlight's on her, but it's only a spotlight in a hotel on New Year's Eve. She's enjoying herself.
Yeah, she's enjoying the fact that she's like the musical Viagra that's got the boys' dicks to rise again and their fortunes to rise with it. Speaking of Viagra, the real sexiness comes the night after this amazing gig that they've had, which has brought down the house and New Year's, and they're in the ballroom alone by themselves. Do you remember?
Yeah, of course I do.
Is that hot?
It was way too hot.
Like, what happens?
He starts giving her a neck massage.
Yeah.
And then he starts nibbling her neck. And then before you know it, his hands are going up her dress. And then before you know it, he's like, zipped down her dress.
Yeah.
And he's, like, cupping her breasts. She's like, we can guess, like, grinding against his dick, you know? It's...
It's horny.
It's horny, yeah.
And it's, you know, because it's a relatively, unexplicit film. We then cut away and she's in bed, they've slept together, but he's getting dressed and she's like, what, did you train to be a fireman? Did you do that at home with a stopwatch? You know, like saying like, oh, look at you. I knew this was going to happen. So it's from here on that things kind of turn bad. I think my favorite scene in the film, which has the three of them all in it, is the scene in the diner, you know, when Bowbridges returns and they're kind of going through what's happened post-New Year's, this big gig that they've had, and he's got all these plans for where they're going to go next. Michelle Pfeiffer, by this point, knows that she's, like, key to the act. She's playing with her food on the plate, and she's got this parsley playing with her in her face, and she's, like, mouthing off to Bowbridges, and he's that great debate that they have about the set list and how he wants to do, like, really boring songs like... What is it?
Feelings. Now, what is Feelings?
We hear it a bit in the movie. She sings it later on. You don't know Feelings?
No.
Feelings, nothing more than feelings, trying to forget those feelings. Yeah, that is literally, I feel like when the brief period of time that I took piano lessons, it's one of those songs that they teach you to play, you know, because it's relatively easy to play along with like...
Bum, bum, yeah. Bum, 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 bum.
It's just like, yeah. If you forget the words, it probably is just fine to say feelings, you know? And there's one point where he says to her something like, oh, you know, you sang the first verse twice. And she's like...
That would explain the gasp from the audience.
It's kicking off between them. She's, like, confessing that, like, you know, when you were away, Beau Bridges, we sang, like, completely different songs. And he's, like, having an apoplectic fit. He says, well, I guess when the cat's away, the mice take over the orchestra. And she's like, I'm not a mouse. And he's like, no, you're parsley.
Ooh.
Ooh, it's a hard burn. So she storms out. She leaves the act. And actually, she leaves the film for an extended period, and we really get down to the brothers. That's where they do that telethon. In a lot of ways, it is actually a film that's about the two brothers. The relationship that ruptures, the change, is about them, and it is called The Fabulous Baker Boys. She is such a crucial component in the film because she speaks truth to them. She speaks truth to Beau Bridges about how shit the act is. And she also has that scene where she essentially calls Jeff Bridges for being a whore as well. He's like whoring out his piano skills when really he could be, you know, doing so much more.
Yeah, and what's the conclusion of the film?
Well, yeah, I actually, even though I'd seen it before, I couldn't remember how it ended. I sort of knew that the brothers drift apart and the act breaks up. But I didn't know if it was going to be this, like, downbeat ending. And what happens? She's gone away. She's doing, like, cat food jingles somewhere. And we haven't seen her for an extended period of the film. The Baker Boys are no more.
And he bumps into her on the street, doesn't he?
Maybe it's that he shows up to bring something to her or something like that. But anyway, they have this re-meeting that kind of occurs an extended period after all this.
You look good.
You look like shit.
No, I mean it. You look good.
I mean it too. You look like shit.
So how's the cat food business?
Terrific. I'm doing vegetables now.
What kind?
Carrots. Peas. None of the important ones.
That's what I mean. You just, like, when you think about those lines, you just, like, fall in love with her all
over
again. Yeah,
it's great, isn't it? But did this get a screenplay nomination?
I don't think so. It got her, and it might have gotten something like editing or cinematography or something. But so how does it end? Like, were you happy with the ending?
Yes, I was.
Because what?
Well, because the film has a kind of has the bitter taste of parsley toward the end of it that you think, oh, please keep this up. Don't just unify them now because I wouldn't believe it. And they tease you with it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, is he going to walk away with her? It's like, because, like, you know the end of Tootsie, for example?
Mm.
So the Dustin Hoffman character and the Jessica Lange character, they walk away, kind of almost getting to know each other for the first time. Tootsie's great because you think, are they unified? Or are they ever going to be friends or what?
Yeah.
You know? That's a wonderful ending because it's ambiguous. And I would have been happy ish if they'd walked away together, but they don't.
But they do leave it open that simmering sex appeal that did boil over is probably going to get a second chance, because they say something like, am I ever going to see you again? I don't know. What do you think? Mm. And we kind of, like, are able to, like, sketch in our brain, like, oh God, I really hope so, because these two people are so right for each other and sort of not right for each other. Yeah, The Fabulous Baker Boys, I'm sure a lot of people would watch it and think, oh, it's cheesy, it's corny, it's like, even for the 80s, I suspect it felt like an old-fashioned type of movie.
It probably felt old-fashioned, but it didn't feel old.
And it's cliche in a lot of ways, but I just think particularly the casting and the chemistry between the brothers, because they're real-life brothers, and between him and her is just freaking amazing.
Yeah.
Now, one little tidbit, which is always fun to think about, like, other actresses taking over this role. Who were some of the people? So you did a little bit of research.
Well, I guessed Madonna at first, and she was one of the people in...
Why do you mean you guessed Madonna?
Well, because it's a singing role in the mid to late 80s. Of course, yeah, she would be considered for it.
And it was also, like, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Would have been terrible.
Deborah Winger? Like, awful. Impossible it wouldn't have, to even consider.
It would have gone $30 million over budget. And like,
why?
Because she would have, like, been... She wouldn't have come out of her dressing room. She would have been difficult.
Been engaging in method acting, thinking, yeah, about what was my call girl career. Can we just contemplate, though? Because
Brooke Shields would have been okay.
That's debatable. I don't know.
Maybe she would have been too young, actually.
I don't think Brooke Shields is a good enough actress. I guess what I'm saying is, like, I could actually see Madonna in this role. But I think it would have revealed a lot of the flaws in the material. So imagine the Fabulous Baker Boys, but like with Susie Diamond played by Madonna. And how does the character shift in your mind from the Michelle Pfeiffer version?
Well, she just doesn't come across as languid.
She's just trashy, to be honest. I feel like she's far more believably trashy.
I think she'd be a lot more hard-edged.
Yeah.
But not in a kind of cool way, but more in a kind of just, you know, you put your hand on you're going to get cut kind of way.
Mm.
But that's only because Madonna can't really relax on screen.
You know, Madonna has been decent, at least in parts of certain movies. And, like, she can sell a Shantuzzi, Dick Tracy.
She can.
Yeah. And she could do a lot of the sex appeal. But I just mean, she wouldn't have those layers and that kind of, like, intelligent humor. Like, I just always think, Michelle Pfeiffer, to me, just always seems like she's doing the thing as an actress that she's being asked to do. But there's something of her that's just slightly in reserve. Do you know what I mean? There's just...
Like, what's the secret?
Yeah, there's something that she's playing, like, only for herself. And I just freaking love that. I don't know. Would you have given her the Oscar for this in 1989?
No, because I would have given it to Pauline Collins.
In Shirley Valentine?
Have you seen Shirley Valentine?
No, but I'm really surprised that you say that.
You need to watch Shirley Valentine.
So do you think Michelle Pfeiffer should have an Oscar, and if so, for what?
Well, maybe she should have shared it with Pauline Collins.
It's a tie. That would have been quite a pairing. Well, my 1989 Oscar ballot would definitely be signed for Michelle Pfeiffer. It's the kind of role that people never win Oscars for until frigging La La Land. I mean,
Don't mention that film.
If we've now come to a point where playing like a singing ingenue can win Emma Stone an Oscar for La La Land, like why was Michelle Pfeiffer robbed for a far richer, far funnier, far sexier, far more interesting musical performances, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, The Fabulous Baker Boys is a light enough film. It's not heavy. It's not The Accused. You know what I mean?
It's like a fucking documentary.
It's a light Hollywood confection in a lot of ways, but she just makes this material work.
You're right, it's not The Accused.
It's not even Jurassic Park to The Lost World.
Yeah, it's called The Lost World Jurassic Park.
Okay, sorry. Well, so are we telling listeners to go out and make Whoopi with The Fabulous Baker Boys?
Absolutely. It's a wonderful date movie, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sadly, it's not playing anywhere to go on a date, but if you want to have a date at home, then go for it. Okay, so that has been the good, but there are two more Michelle Pfeiffer films that we have watched.
Yeah, and I can't wait to hear them, Brian.
Now, we're not going to say what it is now. If you're listening to this on the day it airs, then it will be in your feed tomorrow. If you've waited, then it might, maybe you can just binge them all. So if you really are desperate to know what the bad Michelle Pfeiffer movie is that will be coming up next, then go on to Twitter, @BroadAppealPod, and we'll be teasing some clues or images that might reveal the answer. And subscribe to us while you're there, yeah?
Yep, subscribe on Twitter and subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a review, give us a rating, helps people find us.
Yeah, and you'll hear more from us very soon.
Bye.
My funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile with my heart. Your looks are laughable, unphotographable.